Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. If the American dream is about working hard to provide for yourself and your family, the American nightmare would be about putting in 40 hours a week or more and still struggling to meet even basic expenses. That's the reality for millions of U.S. families, including many in the lower-income North Texas neighborhood called Jubilee Park. KERA reporter Courtney Collins has spent a lot of time there recently, talking to people who live there about the things that keep them from achieving financial stability even when they are trying to do everything right. What she learned and what she shares in her series One Crisis Away, Inside a Neighborhood, is that there are surprising expenses incurred by many of the lowest income members of our communities that do not affect those who have more to earn. We will all hear from a number of Jubilee Park residents throughout the hour as we play some of Courtney's reports. We'll also get perspective from my second guest for the hour, Ben Leal. He is CEO of the nonprofit Jubilee Park Community Center. Ben and Courtney, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about Jubilee Park. Who lives there? Where is it? And how does its location play into the challenges that some of its residents face?
Well, Jubilee Park was founded about 17 years ago through St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church. It's a 62-block area sandwiched between Fair Park and I-30. We always say our informal borders are I-30, Fair Park, and Grand Avenue. When we got started about 17 years ago, we were a predominantly African-American neighborhood, and the neighborhood has turned now. We're about 76-78% Hispanic. We have an average household income of about $14,825. Being in this geographic area has really limited us access into resources into the city. The highway acts as a belt that really cuts us off into other areas in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting when I started reporting there, because I probably went out to the neighborhood about a dozen times, and there's a lot of residential streets where you can look right down the street, and what you're seeing on the horizon is Interstate 30 stacked with traffic. So it really is like a fence that kind of walls the city in and the community in. And everyone I talked to kind of said the same thing.
It really in this neighborhood, before that highway came in, was a nice middle-class neighborhood. The old Ford plants on the corner of Berry and Grand Avenue. That closed down in the 60s, 70s, and the highway started being developed in the 60s and opened up in the late 60s as well. So a lot of the resources, a lot of the jobs left the neighborhood. So it's got a rich history for sure.
And it looks like a lot of that history is starting to change for the good. And I know that's a lot about what the community center is doing. And it's exciting to see that it's a true neighborhood in transition that's had one place that it was, one place that it fell, and then now it's kind of on the way back up.
It is.
There is a lot of good happening in Jubilee Park, including a sparkling community center and a dramatic drop in crime. But life in the shadows of Fair Park is anything but easy. The unemployment rate is twice the state average. In parts of the community, the median income is $14,000 or $16,000. In Jubilee Park, even a bank account is hard to find.
If you want to stock up on food here, you have three options. Get in the car and drive, learn the bus routes, or hoof it under Interstate 30 to the closest store. Lifelong resident Sherman Turner. At the Jubilee Park Community Center, in a neighborhood wedged between Interstate 30 and Fair Park, things can get pretty busy. There's Zumba. There's seniors eating lunch. And there are moments of quiet. So quiet that the loudest thing in the room is Gloria Lopez typing. She's been volunteering here for years and took on a part-time job in May. As a receptionist, Lopez takes home $1,000 a month. The man she lives with makes about the same remodeling houses.
Right now, I think my checking account has probably about $100 after I got done paying all my bills.
$2,000 a month doesn't stretch far when it has to cover a family of three. Lopez has a 12-year-old son to care for, too.
My main concern is him right now, and if I don't have money set aside for him for an emergency, if I have to take him to the hospital or buy some medicine that Medicaid won't cover, and then if I don't have it, he doesn't have the medicine.
Lopez does her best to pay the rent, cover the bills, and keep a little back for the unexpected. She doesn't always make it.
And when we can't make it, we go to the loan place.
The loan place gives her cash for her car title. If you don't pay the loan off, there's a fee added every month. If you don't pay that, you lose your car. Lopez has borrowed money this way three different times.
We asked for $600, so we paid the bills. And we took one car out barely about a month ago, so now we're just working on mine to get it out.
It cost her $230 to take that loan out. Each month, another $230 is due. Lopez says it usually takes her 6 to 8 months to pay it all off, which means at the end of the day, she's paid about $2,000 on a $600 loan.
When all the credit available is credit that is exceedingly expensive at rates of 300 to 600% interest, it's draining the financial stability of our families.
That's Ann Bedore with Texas Appleseed, a nonprofit working for loan reform.
And what we've seen is an explosion in very high-cost products.
Payday and car title lenders can get around state limits on interest by charging fees to roll loans over. Bedore says 2 years ago, one of every 10 Texans took out this kind of loan. More than half of that group had to refinance, and most refinancers rolled the loan over 4 or 5 times.
In our mind, predatory lending is a situation where you have lender success and borrower failure.
So what's the solution? Bedore says the state could enforce a cap on interest rates and fees. She also wants fair alternatives for borrowers. Paul Randall is trying to make that happen with the nonprofit Community Loan Center of Dallas.
This program was tested and piloted down in the Rio Grande Valley, where they have made over 3,400 loans, lending over $3 million.
That program is known as employer-based lending. Here's how it works. The nonprofit puts up the loan money and signs up employers. Once a company commits, its employees can take out loans for a $20 fee at a fixed interest rate of 18%. That may sound high, but compared to the fees on a payday loan, it's a bargain. You can borrow up to $1,000 at a time.
55% of what you make monthly, so you can't borrow more than what you make.
The repayment is automatically deducted from your paycheck over the course of a year, so you can't miss a payment. And that bolsters your credit score. Randall says it feels good to help people get on their feet. After a year working in the corporate office of Texas-based payday lender Ace Cash Express, he says he needed a change.
It got depressing that I was calling and praying on them and hounding them and saw the excessive fees on the back end that was being charged to them.
Eric Norrington with Ace Cash Express says every borrower knows exactly what a loan is going to cost. There aren't any hidden fees or surprises.
We work hard to provide clear, transparent terms to consumers. We post our fees in the lobby of our stores. We offer a 2-week signature loan at a rate that is more often favorable than overdrafting a checking account or bouncing a check.
ACE does allow borrowers to opt in to an interest-free payment plan once a year. That means you can pay off your loan balance by splitting it into 4 equal payments. Rob Norcross thinks there will always be a market for small-dollar loans. He's with the Consumer Service Alliance of Texas, the trade association that represents companies like ACE.
Payday stores and the auto title stores fill that place in the marketplace and provide credit for predominantly credit-challenged folks.
Gloria Lopez is one of those folks, and while she wishes paying off her car title loan would take less time, she'd rather not have to borrow at all.
I don't think people would do it because they want money, they want to go spend it. They normally do it because they need it.
Which, according to advocates for loan reform, is exactly what some lenders are banking on.
That was Courtney Collins reporting. She, along with Ben Leal of the Jubilee Park Community Center, are my guests for the hour. That obviously was a different piece than the one we introduced, but it's still a solid one to talk about right now. What kinds of expenses are people using payday loans to cover?
Well, talking to Gloria, it's nothing outside of the normal. Basically, they're trying to pay their rent with a payday loan, or they're trying to string together some bills that have piled up, maybe ones that are late that they have to take care of before something gets disconnected. And usually it's to compensate for some sort of an emergency, like a prescription that wasn't covered by Medicaid or an extra trip to urgent care or the hospital or something that came up. As Gloria said in that last bite, I thought that was interesting. She said people don't take these loans out to spend. They take them out because they need them. And everybody I talked to said the same thing.
Yeah, and it definitely goes around. You know, you have to remember we live in an older neighborhood as well. Jubilee is an old neighborhood, and a lot of these houses aren't well insulated. So we just dealt with a whole bunch of snow and ice, and heating these homes cost a lot of money for our families as well.
Yeah, or suddenly there's a leak in the roof or a broken window or something like that.
A car repair is another big one. You have to have your car if you're going to keep your job, and you have to keep that going.
What kinds of employers have been open to considering these low-cost loans to their employees through the nonprofit, the kind of program that you mentioned in the piece?
Sure. Well, it actually just rolled out in Dallas pretty recently. I think in the fall is when it officially started. And so they've signed on a few different employers so far. Their own nonprofit is taking advantage of the program so they can practice what they preach. They've got a glass company in Irving that signed on, and the city of Dallas also. And that's thousands and thousands of workers and a lot of people that could probably take advantage of the small loans, and they're all between $500 and $1,000. They're all auto repaid out of your paycheck, kind of like your insurance would be deducted. So you can't miss one. It's all reported to credit, which is helpful. And they're really enthusiastic about this being something that they can expand across the area and across the nation.
I suppose the reason that it's so hard to get out from under a payday loan is that if you're using it to pay a basic expense to begin with, it's not like you're going to have a surge of cash the next time you get your check.
A lot of our residents are on fixed incomes. It's interesting in Jubilee, you're either a senior or you're a very young family. And the seniors in our neighborhood are the ones who are really watching their pennies. That's why we really try to do as much economic type of education that we can on money management. We also try to provide meals to our seniors as well. That way that's one less item they have to spend money on in our neighborhood as well.
I talked to a church a little bit outside of the series just about some microloans they're starting to crank up, and they told me that the first three that they gave out were actually people trying to pay off a payday loan. So they're taking out a faith-based loan to pay off a payday loan.
Mm-hmm. I'm often struck by the research that shows that people who are operating on a really low income are actually more price conscious in some ways, more careful with their money than people who don't really have to think twice at the grocery store. And although education is important, I think it seems like maybe a common misconception that people who have money problems simply don't know how they're spending their money.
That's not the case at all that I found. A lot of our residents are well aware of what they're coming in with each month and what's going out the door each month.
Yeah, I actually couldn't agree more with what you just said. Everyone I spoke to, every kind of character in each of my stories that is a resident of Jubilee Park and that is struggling in one way or another, they are so cost conscious of everything, what things cost at the store, but also they're thinking so far out in regards to their paycheck or their Social Security that they know, okay, well, I really can't afford to swing this thing that's going to happen next month because I'm going to be on this certain check that has to cover these bills. And this, they think like 6-8 weeks out to make sure that they don't get themselves in a bind that they can't get out of.
Mm-hmm. So, Ben, what kind of financial education can, if nothing else, warn people about the potential quagmire that a payday loan can be for some people?
Well, we try to work with our residents as much as we can on homebuyer education is one of the areas that we try to focus on. Our community outreach director, Candace Thompson, does an outstanding job of working with our residents to help them budget for the month. We have a program at the center called Seeds of Hope, where if someone is not meeting their bills by the end of the month, they can come in and visit with Candace and see where we can actually help them out. But Candace actually walks them through a calculator, if you want to say. It's a calculator that budgets out their whole month with their expenditures and addresses where they can possibly make some cuts or where they could actually, you know, cut back on making this payment just yet until they make until they're caught up.
Is the season of the earned income tax credit a big deal in Jubilee Park?
It is. Everybody loves getting their taxes done as soon as they can in our neighborhood. That way they can have some extra cash in their pocket, especially after the holidays.
One thing I thought was interesting about the payday loan is a lot of the nonprofits that we talked to do this story stress that, you know, if something does come up, if there is that rare emergency that, okay, I need to pay something today, my paycheck comes on Friday, I just need to do it a couple days early. There is a way that you can make that kind of short-term loan work for you if you know that you have the exact amount to cover it in a few days. The problem is so many people that I talked to said, okay, we need the money and we're just going to try to worry about it later because there is no solution. But what are they going to do? I mean, they can't get evicted and they can't get their lights cut off. So they just hope for the best and they're more than happy to roll over the loans. And what Paul Randall was saying, who is the former ACE employee, as he said, basically the business is collections. So the company is all too happy to roll the loans over, too.
We're speaking this hour with KERA reporter Courtney Collins and with Ben Leal, who is CEO of the Jubilee Park Community Center. Courtney's series, One Crisis Away, Inside a Neighborhood About the Costs of Living in Poverty, is available now on the KERA website. You can listen to the whole thing. We'll resume our conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372.
Thank you.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning. With classroom instruction, a CFP board-registered curriculum, and flexible class schedules. Applications are now being accepted for the program beginning April 6th. smu.edu/CPFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking today about the costs of living in poverty. We have with us Ben Leal, who is CEO of the Jubilee Park Community Center, and KERA reporter Courtney Collins, who has put together a series called One Crisis Away Inside a Neighborhood. Let's go back now and listen to that story that we promised in the first segment about the difficulty of finding a bank account for some residents of the Jubilee Park neighborhood.
Sometimes the story of a neighborhood comes into focus on a single city block. Welcome to Congo Street. It's just a block long, and it's the heart of Jubilee Park. When the weather's nice and the sun's out, folks flock to their porches. Half a dozen homes have been renovated and retrofitted and are as neat as pins. Down the block, though, Congo Street is pockmarked with old, weathered houses, a vacant lot, and a few beat-up cars. It's a street in transition, much like the neighborhood. Lifelong residents of Jubilee Park are grateful for what's already changed, especially the drop in crime. But bring up the idea of finances or banks and be prepared for skepticism.
I'm just not trusting the banks. You know, electronically, you know, things go wrong. I know if I get my check, it's mine. You know what I'm saying? It ain't gonna get lost. Ain't no hacker gonna get it. Ain't no misplacing or I need a code to get my money.
Chris Crowley's 35 years old and a longtime resident of Jubilee Park. He has a steady job at Target and no bank account. On payday, he forks over a dollar of every hundred he makes to cash his check. But to him, it's worth it.
You read about every day some bank is losing information and I got bills to pay and I ain't got time to tell the light company, hey, I can't pay y'all right now because it was a glitch and my money's lost.
There's no law that says you have to have a bank account. Economists have a word for it, unbanked. It might sound academic and far away. It's not. About 13% of Texans are unbanked, according to the Corporation for Enterprise Development. That means no checking account, no savings account, nothing.
It's a challenge. And in Dallas, we've got some big issues, too. I think in the city of Dallas, it's almost 15.6% of people are unbanked, and then another 26% underbanked.
That's Susan Hoff with the United Way of Metropolitan Dallas. What those numbers add up to is two of every five North Texans either don't have banks or are underbanked. That means you have an account, but you still rely on things like payday loans.
That's a lot of folks who don't have access to, you know, a direct deposit, for instance, or the ability to write a check to pay utility bills or rent, or be able to get cash easily.
There's an even bleaker statistic about full-time workers over the course of a lifetime.
Those without a bank account can spend $40,000 just to cash their paychecks.
That's right, $40,000. Laura Rosen's with the Center for Public Policy Priorities in Austin. She says most people who go without a bank account also buy money orders every month, and some pay fees to put money on a prepaid card. In Jubilee Park, 63-year-old Roger Payne fits that description.
I don't have no problem with banks. I just don't have the money to put there. That's all that is.
Payne still works 18 hours a week through a program run by the AARP. He cleans and organizes at a Dallas community center. He also gets a small Social Security check. He says he makes less than $1,000 a month, so a prepaid card works better for him.
The money that I get from AARP goes directly on my card, and money from Social Security goes directly on my card, so I don't have a need for a bank.
He says it costs him about $5 a month to maintain the card. $60 a year isn't steep, but being unbanked comes with deeper costs, too. Without an account, it's hard to save money and even harder to build credit. Some people choose not to have a bank account. Some couldn't open one if they wanted to. Laura Rosen says a bad banking history is hard to rewrite.
Let's say you had insufficient funds, and then you're put into a system called check systems, which kind of a lot of banks will not allow you to open an account if you're in that system for a while.
Which is where organizations like the United Way come in. It backs the program Bank On in Dallas, Denton, and other U.S. cities. The program works with local banks and credit unions, encouraging them to take on potentially risky customers. It educates those customers, too.
whether that's financial literacy training, connecting them with a financial coach, really educating them on the benefits of banking and how they'd actually go about getting connected to a bank.
And when it comes to the trek out of poverty, that's an important step. The average person without a bank account spends $1,000 a year on fees. That's a lot of money for anyone. For folks struggling to get by, it's a fortune. For someone living paycheck to paycheck in Jubilee Park like Chris Crowley, that money actually buys peace of mind.
I cash mine, put it in my pocket, and pay my bills, and that's that, you know.
A philosophy that doesn't come cheap, but one many of his neighbors share.
That was Courtney Collins reporting for KERA. Courtney, when people do not have a bank account and they have, say, every couple of weeks, you know, a big influx of cash, are they more susceptible to being robbed?
Yeah, absolutely. Security is a big issue, and that's something we didn't even have time to go into in as much detail as I'd like. But if you keep your money somewhere in your house or carry it on you, I mean, it's just not secure. You do have a good chance of being robbed if people know where it is and, you know, you have someone who's up to no good. Also, another issue is access. If you have all your cash in a safe place in your home and that's where you keep it and you're somewhere else and you have an emergency, you can't go to an ATM if you don't have a bank account. You just don't have access to your own money unless you carry it on you, which is pretty risky, too.
Ben, I know one thing that the neighborhood is really proud of is that crime has come way down over the past decade and a half. Can you talk a little bit about what it took to do that?
It took really working with our residents to getting to know their needs and what their concerns were. About 5-6 years ago, Tom Harbison, who was the chair of our public safety task force, walked the streets of our neighborhood, wanted to get to know the residents and understand what their wants are and their concerns were regarding public safety. And he met this woman on the front porch, and she said, "Young man, what are you doing in this neighborhood?" And he said, "Well, I'm trying to understand the neighborhood and trying to work with public safety." And she says, "You'll know you'll make an impact in this neighborhood when people put plants or pots on their front steps." And that speaks volumes. Why aren't people putting pots and flowers in their front yard? Because they'd get stolen. Well, fast forward 7 years later, and you can drive through the neighborhood and see a sense of pride, a sense of ownership in the neighborhood. And I really think that success happened because of our partnership and relationship with the City of Dallas and the Dallas Police Department. Sergeant Wilson Jones is the sergeant at the Resource Center, which is a police storefront on our campus. Since that presence, the police presence has been on our campus. It houses a police storefront, code compliance, and community prosecutor. There's also 17 cameras spread out throughout the 62-block area that makes up Jubilee. So those cameras are monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at the Resource Center and at the 911 call center. It's just not having the police in the neighborhood or the cameras in the neighborhood. It's actively being involved with our residents. The police department in our on our campus act as the Boy Scout leaders. They are the chaperones when we go on field trips. They're going block walking with us. They're riding their bikes through the neighborhood. They're accessible. They're approachable. And I think that relationship and that communication with our residents has really seen the big drop in crime in our neighborhood.
There are obviously lots of probably pockets of North Texas that could use the attention of a church like St. Michael and All Angels. But can you talk about how the church picked Jubilee Park and how you mentioned the importance of talking to residents about what they wanted and what they needed rather than sort of just coming in from the outside and saying, here's what we're going to do for you?
Well, definitely. St. Michael and All Angels is the church that found Jubilee. We're not a religious organization, but we were found by a church. St. Michael was getting ready to celebrate their 50th anniversary or their Jubilee, and that's where our name comes from, Jubilee Park. And they went ahead and put together a task force to identify the most underserved area in the City of Dallas. And this was at 62 blocks southeast Dallas. It really didn't have a name before Jubilee. I think the closest thing was Crosstown. The first step that we wanted to do was listen to the residents. I'm not saying that we are perfect about listening to the residents and hearing all their needs, but we're getting better at it. And the first thing was public safety. And we knew that in order to get the residents and neighborhood involved in the activities at the community center, we needed to have them feel safe exiting their home. So public safety was the very first thing we tackled, and then we moved into education.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now and speak with Johnny in Irving. Hi, Johnny.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
My question for the guest is, we heard earlier in the show about the Lopez family, and she mentioned that she's in, you know, economic difficulty, and at the same time she's having difficulties sort of getting all resources for her three children. So my question for the host is, are there any services available to a resident of Jubilee Park where they can go and get some counseling perhaps on sort of what the impact of decisions they have on family choices on their economic outlook.
Are you talking about family planning? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
In particular, the you know, with regards to the number of children.
Thanks for your call.
We do education classes for our youth. Our middle school program actually has a partnership with Plains Capital Bank where we do money management classes. Once a week, Plains Capital will come over to our campus and do education courses with our kids on how to budget, how to balance your checkbook, how to utilize a credit card. We also do offer services through our community outreach office on working with our residents to help them plan and budget accordingly for the month. We also do we're also in the business of building affordable homes in our neighborhood. And Jubilee is very proud of the pre- and post-homebuyer education classes that we do at the center as well. And that's offered through East Dallas Community Organization.
And one thing, when I talked to Trish Oliver, who's the mother we featured in our story that aired earlier this week about just life with low wages, she takes advantage of a parenting class that Jubilee Park offers and is very enthusiastic about it and has actually formed quite a bond with some of the other moms in that situation. So it's really interesting to me that it's not just financial literacy. There is a lot about how you raise your children and what works for you as a mom, a single parent, two parents. And she really has enjoyed taking advantage of that program as well.
Yeah. Let's talk about life with low wages, Courtney. You spoke to a number of people who are fully employed but still can't pay even basic expenses. And these are not people living extravagantly. These are people who just want to get the rent paid and put food on the table and clothes on their backs.
Exactly. What's interesting, almost everyone I talk to is kind of in that situation where they have a steady job with a company that gives them a lot of hours, but they just don't make enough to always pay their bills on time. For example, Trisha gets $10 an hour, which is, you know, 30-something percent above minimum wage, which is $7.25 in Texas. But she has a child, and she doesn't get child support or government benefits. It's just her. And $10 an hour for 35 hours or so a week isn't enough. And we use this living wage calculator in that piece that MIT developed, and it's just fascinating. It's even probably a year or two old, so you probably need a little bit more than this now in 2015. But it posits that to scrape by as a single adult, you can make about $9.29 an hour and just get by if it's just you. But you add in one child if you're a single adult, and that goes up to $19 an hour and 13 cents. So you add 10 bucks in. $19 an hour and 13 cents is a lot of money for a lot of the people who are working in this neighborhood. And those jobs are not just hanging around waiting to be taken advantage of. So, I mean, that's just quite a taste of what it takes to get by if you have a kiddo.
To make nearly $20 an hour, typically you need some education, certainly a high school diploma. What's the level of education among adults in the neighborhood right now? Is there an average?
About 72% of our family, or the residents in Jubilee, do not have a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're really trying to work on our campus is economic development, workforce development classes that make our residents workforce ready. We're really proud of our partnerships. I keep on mentioning partnerships and relationships. That's what makes Jubilee so successful. We have a very active adult education program at the center. We've actually partnered with Dallas County Community College District to offer workforce readiness classes. And the whole idea is to get our residents excited about the possibility of finishing their GED or getting their GED, continuing on the college for those that do have a high school diploma. And our ESL and PC classes have completely changed from, you know, we all know it's important to know your 1, 2, 3s, ABCs, but how do I communicate effectively to find a job? And that's why we've partnered with Dallas County Community College District to offer these courses.
What have you learned, Ben, maybe just through talking to people, about why there's such a relationship between parents who don't finish high school and then kids who don't finish high school in the following generation? So many adults want their children to do better than they do, and yet it's a real challenge for a lot of families.
It really is. I think you have a lot of outside factors affecting people's decision not to finish high school. We have a high rate of teen pregnancies in our neighborhood. So a lot of families feel, well, I'm pregnant, I need to stop going to school so I can raise my child, or I need to marry, you know, father of my child. We're dealing a lot with those type of issues in our neighborhood.
Courtney, one of the things that you learned, this is really interesting, is that when there is a couple with a child, they can get by on actually less than a single parent with a child. Can you explain how that's the case?
Yeah, that confused me when I first looked at this grid, but it's childcare. And they're basically figuring in, okay, we have one provider in both families, the two-parent household and the single-parent household. If you've got two, you have someone to stay home with your child that's not in public school yet, and you don't have to spend money on childcare. So it's that cost of childcare. And luckily for some people in Jubilee Park, there is no-cost childcare available. But if you don't have that option, daycare is very pricey, especially the younger the child is, the pricier it is. So if you have an infant or if you have an infant and a toddler, you are looking at a lot of money that you're paying to childcare just to be able to work.
And we're really trying to work with our residents about educating them the importance of starting their kids early. We do offer early Head Start education and Head Start programming on our campus. So that's free child care, and you're engaging your child in the early process of learning to read, of having to communicate, hearing different voices. So there's plenty of opportunity, and we're trying to work with our residents on the importance of getting them activated in Jeannie's Place and David's Place, which is our early Head Start and Head Start facilities.
If you were to walk down a street in Jubilee Park on a pretty Saturday afternoon, how much interaction would you see among neighbors, and what's the feel of the place?
I take it, Ben?
Yeah, sure.
Go for it.
I love this because every time when I drive home in the evening time or when I'm just driving through the neighborhood on a summer day, for instance, I see kids outside riding their bikes. I see neighbors up front talking in their front yards. I see people interacting with each other. And I think it's just a great thing to see because living in the city of Dallas, you really don't see a true neighborhood inside the city limits anymore. And when you drive through our neighborhood, it's a sense of a real community.
I suppose it's the upside of being a little bit cut off from other parts of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite story I have to share. So I went to Congo Street a lot, which is, some say it's the shortest street in Dallas, right?
It's definitely the narrowest street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, narrow street. It's just like a neighborhood block long. And this little boy on Congo Street, I ran into him two or three times when I was there, and you could hear him a little bit in the last story. He was just riding his bike and figure eights around me singing little songs he had made up. And then every now and then when I'd stop recording, he'd say, you know, I like to sing. And I'd be like, let me hear some more. And he would just loop all around the block singing. And he was just as happy as could be. It was really, really fun to go out there and see him as kind of a returning character in all my pieces.
We're speaking this hour with KERA reporter Courtney Collins and with Ben Leal, who is CEO of the Jubilee Park Community Center. Courtney's series, One Crisis Away Inside a Neighborhood, is about the costs of living in poverty. You can find the whole thing online. And we will resume the conversation in a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Certificate Program in Financial Planning. With classroom instruction, a CFP board-registered curriculum, and flexible class schedules. Applications are now being accepted for the program beginning April 6th. smu.edu/CPFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about the high costs of living in poverty with Ben Leal, who is CEO of the nonprofit Jubilee Park Community Center, and KERA reporter Courtney Collins. Jubilee Park isn't technically a food desert. That's defined as a community that doesn't have a grocery store within a one-mile radius. There is a supermarket, but you have to cross under I-30 to get there. In the second part of her KERA series, One Crisis Away Inside a Neighborhood, Courtney reported that a lot of people in Jubilee Park drive for miles to get their groceries, and folks without a car pay the price at the corner store.
If you want to stock up on food here, you have three options. Get in the car and drive, learn the bus routes, or hoof it under Interstate 30 to the closest store. Lifelong resident Sherman Turner prefers another option, his trusty bicycle.
We have to go up here on Columbia to Malone's, or go over South Dallas to Martin Luther King, to Minions. And those with cars, you know, I have to ride this bike up there.
Turner bikes everywhere. He doesn't have a car, so he just hangs his grocery bags on the handlebars. Right next to the stuffed chihuahua acting as hood ornament.
Yeah, that's my little guard dog there.
You gotta go, you know, travel at least 10 miles to go to a decent grocery store. That's ridiculous.
Yolanda Weeks lives around the corner on Congo Street. She shops at a Kroger 15 minutes away and counts herself lucky because she can drive.
If you got no car, then you pretty much have to buy from the little corner stores, knickknacks. You're not really getting a full, complete meal as if you go to the grocery store and can actually prepare it yourself.
And the experts agree. When there is limited access to fresh, healthy food, people don't eat it. Instead, they make do with what's available. Stacy Sharonis is a dean at Paul Quinn College and is also president of the nonprofit Get Healthy Dallas.
If there are no grocery stores around, then you learn how to get food another way. You learn how to feed your family from the corner store.
There are half a dozen corner stores within an easy walk. The closest grocery store to Jubilee is 3/4 of a mile away across the highway. It's called Malone's Cost Plus, and it caters to Latino customers. The store keeps the prices on the shelf low and adds its markup at the register. 20% if you spend $15 or less, 10% if you spend $150. The idea is to encourage customers to buy a lot of groceries at once. That's not easy to do if you don't have a car.
For those that are looking for fresh, healthy food, it's tough. You know, they have to get on public transportation or borrow a car or figure out a way to get to a grocery store. And that's often really hard when you have children.
Or if you're a senior citizen or have multiple jobs to make ends meet. Owen Lynch is a professor at SMU and works with Sharonis at Get Healthy Dallas.
If you have 2 jobs or 3 jobs and then you have young children and all of their activities and school, when are you supposed to find the hour and a half of your day or of your week to go up and grab groceries and bring them back and then also then prepare them and cook them and hope you can cook them efficiently enough where they don't perish?
Access to grocery stores is a big part of the problem in Jubilee Park. Lynch and Sharonis are really fighting against bad habits.
If it's been decades since you've had a grocery store around, you probably aren't in the habit of cooking up broccoli for dinner.
Which is why plunking a large store into a neighborhood won't magically solve the problem. Get Healthy Dallas works on a smaller scale. Think culinary programs in schools, restaurants, and micro-farming.
Not only are communities going to have access to fresh food and learn about fresh food, but they'll actually see the production of fresh food and the production of jobs that relate to food system jobs.
The Jubilee Park Community Center is already working to do that. Every Wednesday and Friday, it serves a hot, healthy meal to seniors. There's a chef on staff and half a dozen volunteers who spend several hours getting the food ready. Maria Montez is one of them.
Eating healthy costs a lot. I know, because I go to the groceries, and I mean, vegetables and food cost a lot of money. Jubilee come and at least provide food, you know, healthy food for them 2 days a week.
On this particular day, volunteers are serving up homemade beef stew, cornbread, and applesauce. Maria says it's the best a lot of the seniors eat all week.
If I'm a senior and I want to eat good, you know, most of the seniors truly, I mean, they don't have transportation.
And a lot of them aren't up for a long bus ride or a trek under I-30, which is why meals at the community center are so vital. The giving spirit of the Jubilee Park volunteers doesn't hurt either.
I can give love and care, and I tell them, like I told them today, one day I'm going to be in your shoes. And maybe Jehovah said to me, you know what? I'm going to give you some of the little things that you give to others.
To the seniors benefiting from these nutritious meals, Maria's kind service isn't such a little thing.
That was KERA's Courtney Collins reporting. Also with us today, we have Ben Leal, who is CEO of the Jubilee Park Community Center. Ben, is the community center involved in at all in trying to like recruit businesses that would come in? Courtney pointed out that, you know, putting a big grocery store within the neighborhood wouldn't necessarily fix things. But I wonder if that's outside the scope of what the community center is trying to do.
No, not at all. You know, Jubilee takes a holistic approach to community revitalization. So we have great traction on public health, public safety, affordable housing and education. One of the areas we've been struggling with here lately has been economic development and how we can get that off the ground. We're actually looking to launch our economic development task force and do a feasibility study for the neighborhood and find out what are the specific needs for this community around banking, around pharmacies, around grocery stores. And our hope is to be able to attract eventually a larger grocer into the area that has all those three items in one big grocery store.
Courtney, I was thinking about the simple issue of carrying groceries home by hand. There are several months a year in North Texas where by the time you get home with a bag of produce or, you know, anything frozen, it's going to be trashed if you've been walking for half an hour.
And that is a huge part of the problem. Owen Lynch talked to me quite a bit about that. He's the SMU professor that was featured in that story. He said even the size of your kitchen can impact how you shop. He's like, okay, so you get the best deal when you buy in bulk. Most of the time, if you're in a low-income housing situation, you can't bring that stuff
home. You
can't
store 10 pounds of rice
or beans. Exactly, exactly. And the stuff, the perishables, the healthy produce and, you know, meats that you can prepare later on are really hard to preserve, like you were saying, if you're on a 90-minute bus ride, especially in the middle of the summer.
I think it's also, you know, the assumption is often that people who have poor diets simply don't understand what they should be eating. And this story made it sound like the reality is a lot more complicated than that.
I think it's much more an issue of how can I get there? I mean, especially if you've got two jobs, like Trisha in the story I talked about earlier, she was working 60 hours a week when she first got to Dallas. She was doing like 4 o'clock in the morning to noon and then running over somewhere else and doing another 5 hours. I mean, she doesn't have a car and you just don't have the time to string together like a 2 or 3 stop bus route round trip to a store sometimes. And you can't always walk and carry enough back to make it worthwhile. So I really think using the corner store isn't, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to buy junk food because that sounds good. I think it's, I don't know where else to go, how I'm going to possibly squeeze enough time out of the day to make this happen. So I'm just going to do the best I can at the corner store. I'm making do. I'm not making a choice.
Yeah, and definitely being a food swamp, as Jubilee is, we are spotted with corner stores all over the place. And when you go to these stores, they offer cheap items. So you can buy candy, you can buy chips, you can actually buy beer cheaper at Don's than you can buy milk. And these are the options our residents are faced with every day.
And I notice the corner stores will, you know, they'll stock some canned goods and they'll stock rice, but we don't have a lot of fresh vegetables. We don't have meat unless it's something that's prepackaged or behind the deli counter in a corner store. So you just don't have a lot of options. So that's what you get used to doing. And that's why they said they're fighting against habits a lot of the time. Some research that Owen and Stacy did earlier in a different neighborhood showed that at first, when they broached the idea of a grocery store coming into that community, people thought that it would just be too expensive because it was nice and new and they weren't used to it. So they weren't even really inclined to try it at the beginning. So it's not just getting the businesses, as their research has shown. It's really trying to break old habits and make good new ones.
And that's why the nutrition and health push has been really important for us because, you know, we offer Senior Cafe on Wednesdays and Fridays for our seniors in our neighborhood. And that's a big benefit for our seniors because now they don't have to pick between medicine or food. So at least 2 days a week and they get sent home with a to-go bag of food to eat. That's more money in their pocket. 98% of our kids are free or reduced lunch in our neighborhood as well. So in our after-school program, for instance, we serve over 200 meals a day out of our kitchen to those students in our after-school program. And for a lot of our kids, that's the last meal they're going to eat before they go to bed. We also, now in the next school year, we'll be starting Backpack Buddies, where we put 10 pounds of non-perishable food in a student's backpack to sustain them over the weekend. So it's really important for us that we try to get healthy, nutritious food into our kids' systems and make it accessible for our residents as well.
What happens for those kids over the summer when school lunch isn't happening?
We offer a really large summer program as well. So we do breakfast, lunch, a snack, and it's not only for the kids in our summer program. Anybody in the neighborhood can come to the center. If they're hungry, they can ask for a meal at the kitchen, and they'll be given one. We also do Fridays. Every Friday, we have a partnership with the North Texas Food Bank, where we'll be giving away pallets of fresh fruits and vegetables to our community as well.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Gabrielle in Plano. Hi, Gabrielle.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make a quick comment. It's very hard for poor Americans, but let me tell you, it's way, way too harder for immigrants or newcomers. If they happen to be illegal immigrants, oh my God, that's a burden. Everything is super expensive. To cash a check, to run a red light, you have to pay. No insurance, your ticket, plus no license. So it's a $1,000 ticket. It's outrageous. So I understand part of the problem is probably a cultural issue. Recently, I read an article saying like newcomers don't have the language, don't know the culture, and nevertheless, they send money back to their original countries.
Right, so they're not even living on everything that they earn. Gabrielle, thank you so much for your call. I saw you nodding your head during some of that call, Ben. Do a lot of the folks in Jubilee Park, are they also getting accustomed to a new country, a new culture?
There is a lot of some undocumented individuals in their neighborhood that deal with these type of issues every day, and a lot of it deals with just education. A lot of them feel they can't reach out to the police or they can't reach out to the city resources if they're needing help. So I do see that every day.
One thing, when I spoke to Susan Hoff for the story about not having a bank account, one thing she mentioned when we were just chatting before the interview was, even if you are in this country legally, like say you have a green card, if you don't have the ID that certain banks like, you're stuck. So sometimes people are here, they're taking all the steps they're supposed to take, and they still can't get a bank account because certain institutions maybe close by to where they live don't even recognize the kind of identification they have with them. So it's those tiny challenges every day that completely change how those folks live. And I mean, they're trying to get a checking out, they can't. They end up spending money to cash their paychecks or buy money orders. So it's interesting just how one small thing can kind of affect everything you do with all your money.
There have been banks I know that over the years have tried to do outreach to lower income folks who have been unbanked. I suppose, do those efforts not go far enough? Have they not really taken off?
I think that it's kind of, there's two answers to that question. First of all, I do think some people struggle with not understanding the banking system properly. When I talked to a lot of folks in Jubilee Park, I got two opinions parroted back to me several times. One group said, banks aren't for me. I'm okay without it. I just don't need it. And there was kind of the idea that I don't make enough money. It's not really worth the trouble. And in some sense, that's very true because a lot of bank accounts aren't free. You know, you have to pay fees to maintain them. Maybe it's not a good deal for those people. And then I also talked to a lot of people who are a little suspicious, who are mistrustful of the banking system, who are even a little hostile, who believe that their money is not secure in a bank, that any kind of technological glitch, as Chris Carley was saying, could make his money disappear and then he wouldn't be able to pay his bills. I actually talked to one man who truly believed that his bills would be automatically paid through his checking account, whether or not he authorized those payments every month. And he was afraid, wonder if I was short 1 month and I didn't have enough to cover it. I couldn't control that. So I think there is a lack of understanding sometimes about how the banking system works. I also think that those outreach efforts are great, but they don't always reach to every corner. And I think that's what Bank On through United Way is trying to do, is they're trying to do it two ways. They're trying to educate people who need a bank account, and they're also trying to work with banks and credit unions to say, open it up to these folks. You know, even if they've had insufficient funds issues in the past, open it up to them, take a chance on a risky customer because we're helping them budget their money properly so they don't run into problems again.
Ben, what do you see as the future of Jubilee Park? Can a working class but sort of down at heel neighborhood turn back into a fully middle class neighborhood?
I definitely think so. We're on the right track. We've made significant gains over the 17 years that we've been in the neighborhood, and it's been because of the commitment and the drive of the residents themselves. So I definitely think that we will see a sustaining neighborhood down the road for Jubilee.
Ben Leal is CEO of Jubilee Park Community Center. Courtney Collins is a reporter with KERA. You can learn more about Jubilee Park and about the high cost of living in poverty online via KERA's One Crisis Away project. And Courtney, there's a lot at that site that we didn't even have a chance to talk about or play today.
Right. The visuals are stunning. We have excellent photography that Lara Salt did for us of the neighborhood that really captures it. I mean, I think one of the coolest things about Jubilee is how bright it is, because mm-hmm. there's not huge leafy trees everywhere. So the sun kind of lights up the whole place and you really get a sense of that. Also, the videos that Thorne did for us are incredible. I really want everyone to get the chance to check them out. You're going to hear the story of a Cambodian refugee who's now a homeowner in Jubilee Park and works with the police department. It's a really wonderful project.
Great stuff. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and you can contact the show via email at think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.